Welcome to Inside the Program, presented by Academy Sports and Outdoors. I'm Joe Cook, got Eric Nalin. It's our weekly look behind the scenes. What's going on in training camp as Texas is just over 2 weeks away from heading to Columbus and playing Ohio State, and maybe a little bit over 24 hours or right around 24 hours away from their second scrimmage of the preseason. So a lot of notes to go over. Make sure you like the video. Make sure you subscribe to the channel. And, of course, make sure you head to InsideTexas.com. Use the link. It's the first one in the description for this video. Join now. You join the best Texas Longhorns community. You get the best team info, the best recruiting intel, the best coverage, everything, all for just $1. And you get a full year of access to The Athletic as well. So that is the first link in our description. Go check that out. Also in the description for this video, a link to Paul Wadlington's Thinking Texas Football, the 2025 Longhorn Football Prospectus, a look at every position, every player, every team on the schedule, every SEC team, a look at the landscape of college football, and then also a look at the 2025 recruiting class from Eric Nalin. So landscape of college football changed a little bit today with some Michigan things, but Michigan's not on the schedule. Ohio State is. You'll learn a lot about the Buckeyes and every team from this book, as well as a lot about the Longhorns. Be the best informed fan. Sign up for Inside Texas and go get Thinking Texas Football. Today, Eric, we'll talk about what are some of the expectations for Arch Manning, realistic ones and optimistic ones and ones from ground level as opposed to being written by, you know, somebody in New York City. More on the star battle as well as how Derek Williams is faring in the secondary. Freshman fits for five-star talents in the NASCAR package. What each running back brings to the table. And then a little tidbit on lucky number 7. So first up, we got to start with the Arch Manning part of this. Whatever anybody wants to say is always going to be, you know, taken as an extreme, and whether you support him, you don't like him, you know, you think somewhere in the middle, but he's got to play, and yep, he's got to play here in his third year in the program, but first as a starter. You had some good comparisons on Inside Texas in those tidbits you posted this morning, but how good, and it was from a lot of questions that members posed to us and that you posed to sources within the program, but the one you asked is how good is Arch going to be this year? And I think it's one that we've been trying to relay to people all throughout the offseason.
Yeah, you know, the defense sets the floor for the program, but I think it could be Arch and his ability to affect the whole playbook that sets the ceiling. And so that's why, you know, everybody's kind of excited. You know, the hype around him is probably unfair to him, but, you know, he really is that talented. He really is that good. We've seen the talent. Now we need to see the consistency. You know, going up against Ohio State is a test. They lost a lot on defense, but they're still a very, very strong program, obviously. You know, I don't think that he is, or I don't think the expectations are that he's going to be a one-man show. They can't put it all on Arch. They know that. Everybody's going to have to do their job, especially the defense. He's going to have to get help from the offensive line in the run game. He can't be a one-man show. He can't shoulder the whole load. He's not ready for that. Hopefully it never comes to that, but he's not ready for that, even if it does come to that. The question I had, you know, who was the best quarterback they played last year? It was pretty obvious, Cade Klubnik. So if you use Cade Klubnik as a barometer, he's not to that level yet. Now, Cade had like 500-something pass attempts going into last season. He's got a lot more experience than Arch does going into this season. So maybe a little bit lower than Cade Klubnik from last year should be the expectations for Arch, at least if you're going by the quarterbacks that we're all most familiar with, which you can still win a national championship with Cade Klubnik sort of play from last year, assuming that the defense, special teams, and skill players do their part. Now, the first game is a little bit of there's a lot of variability in there. Nobody really knows what to expect from Arch in that first one, but they do think he's going to be good. And they think by the end of the season, he could be playing at a Heisman level, especially if the team is having the season everybody hopes they do.
It's, even Klubnik, when you look at his career right behind DJU, when DJU was going down, it wasn't like Klubnik was just surging. He was playing better and better, but right, he had to develop, and he developed into that player he became that Texas fans saw last year. And one of the things I've also been saying is that, you know, there's a lot of doubt around Manning just because, well, if he didn't play over Quinn and if he's not starting till his junior or his third year, I've been saying as far as breaking in a new quarterback for the SEC, this is as good of a situation as you can have. You have, just independent of who he is, he's a third-year player in the same offense who has started games, who saw a lot of action. And then you add all the Manning aspects on top of that. Like, this is as good as you can ask for when you're replacing a veteran quarterback and bringing in somebody who only has two starts, one under ULM and one under one against Mississippi State under his belt. Yeah. So
the good thing is he's a natural playmaker too. So even when he's wrong, he's going to be right. Sometimes he's going to make some of those, go plays. You know, everybody's freaking out and then they get excited. The coaches look like a hero, like they called the great play, but it's really Arch freelancing. There's going to be plenty of that. There's never going to be a dull moment with him. There are going to be some growing pains, but I think he's grown up a lot. You know, we haven't heard about nearly as many turnovers as I expected this offseason. That's been quiet pretty much going back to spring ball. So I'm very optimistic about how well Arch is going to play this year, but it might not be up to that, the expectations that people have, just because the expectations might not be realistic.
We'll move over to the defensive side of the ball, start in the secondary. Some notes on Starr. We've kind of talked about how, at least I wrote about this yesterday, they may have some variance in who they put at Starr depending on what types of offenses they go up against. Jelani McDonald gives them some versatility. Grayson Littleton gives them a different look, and Wardell Mack as well competing there. It sounds like that's just going to be – you won't see like a depth chart battle per se. You'll just see, okay, who can we trust in these situations against these types of offenses?
Yeah, it's kind of like doing – you know, if you do the tight end depth chart, you have to account for what personnel you're going with. I think that'd probably be the same thing. Your defensive depth chart would matter who the offensive personnel is. You know, they used Jelani McDonald against 12 personnel a lot last year, even as early as the Michigan game, and I think that's going to be a staple this season. However, I don't know exactly how it's going to play out when Ohio State is an 11 personnel. Are they going to trust Grayson Littleton out there this early? You know, every week we monitor, you know, who's playing Starr and what situation. This week it was mostly Grayson Littleton and Wardell Mack going back and forth with the ones with Jelani back at safety. That tells us that the offense is probably working more 11 personnel this week, which makes a lot of sense because they just focused a lot of 12 personnel in the scrimmage. For those that don't know, that's two tight ends is 12 personnel. 11 personnel is one tight end. So I think it's just going to depend on the looks. And we've been talking all offseason. Akina likes to work the matchups. It's almost like basketball. Who they have out on the floor, now you counter with your personnel. I think it's going to be a lot of that. Now, the one thing we just don't know for sure, like I said, is Ohio State. Jelani may be out there a lot against 11 personnel. As for Derek Williams, you know, a lot of that's tied to Starr because, you know, you can't really play Jelani at Starr if Derek is not playing well. Well, Derek is playing well. He's not quite himself. You know, the sources are saying he's not quite that guy that we saw flying all over the field against Oklahoma right before he got hurt. That's just a different level of athlete. My wife even asked me, who's that guy screaming across the field? He just looks different out there on the football field. He's not quite to that level. But one thing that's good is that he's a lot smarter than he was a year ago. He definitely took that downtime last year and took advantage of it, learned as much as he could about the position, learns how to read offenses, coverages, and all that. Route concepts, I should say. So he's a much smarter player than he was last year, and he's still a good athlete. Maybe not quite as explosive, and that's not to say he won't get that back. He's probably on his way to getting that back. But he looks good in the deep post right now, comfortable, and I think he's going to start against Ohio State.
Before we keep on going, you got to show some love to our sponsor, and that is Academy Sports and Outdoors.
All right. Who's ready?
I'm open.
Staying on defense, Texas has some, as you wrote about in Thinking Texas Football and plenty on Inside Texas, there's some talented guys in that 2025 class. Justice Terry, Lance Jackson, two players who were five stars when the cycle was all said and done. Those are the types of players that, you know, want to play early, aspire to play early, but they have to find their roles on the field, especially when there is a very, very talented roster that they're joining. But it seems as if they're going to find some sort of role this year in a package that's been very good to Texas.
Well, that's going to be their best route, most likely, is getting on the field in the packages. Now, just because that there's a log jam, if you're looking at edge, if you're looking at defensive tackle, there's just so much talent, NFL talent, there's experience. So I think getting in and, like, you know, standard first, second down is going to be tough to fight their way. The introduction to the field is probably going to come through NASCAR package. NASCAR is a blitz package. You know, you could play Lance Jackson up and down the line in that look. You can play Justice Terry up and down the line in that look. That typically moves Ethan Burke inside and puts him out there with one true defensive tackle, maybe Marad Watson, maybe Alex January, if we're talking about the athletic upside guys in the room. But it could also be Justice Terry, or it could be Justice Terry in place of Ethan Burke, too. Source thinks that, you know, they've got to get these guys on the field, and they got to see what they can handle. And then from there, this is going to be their introduction to the field to see what they can handle, maybe expand their roles even further as the season progresses. We saw them do this with Anthony Hill's freshman year. Different position, of course, but same premise. And then Colin Simmons last year as well. And then another interesting point about NASCAR is that's going to be the one where we really see Trey Moore. You know, he's out on the field at linebacker in that look, except he's all over the place. He could be coming from the edge. He could be coming up the A-gap. It doesn't matter. They're going to move him around a lot. So don't forget about Trey Moore. Trey Moore's going to have a very important role on this team in that package, also on standard downs, but I think we're going to see a lot of highlight plays from Moore in the NASCAR package.
If I remember last year, the front five for this look had Vernon Broughton at tackle, Baron Sorrell as the other tackle, but inside a little bit more than what he was typically doing. You had Simmons, you had Moore, you had Hill, and then Jadae Barron would slide inside pretty often. And it sounds like it's going to look different, but fitting, this is such a fun problem to think about. Like, how do we put Lance Jackson, Justice Terry, Colin Simmons, Trey Moore, Anthony Hill, all these guys on the field at the same time? Like, that's five right there. You only get 11. If you're playing that, you usually try to have six, sometimes maybe seven DBs. Like, this is one of those really fun problems to figure out. And one of the it could be something to where, you know, Lance Jackson finds himself maybe not on the field as often as he might have thought, just because there is so much talent ahead of him. Maybe not ahead of him, but established talent there to make this such a diabolical package.
Yeah, there's a lot of options. You got explosive athletes. You've got length. You got guys that have both. But this is going to be the way that you can say, all right, it's third and 12. We're probably not going to get too hurt on this play. Even if they pick up 10, they're going to get off the field. This is a good time to put in a true freshman and just let them go be an athlete.
We'll keep going. We'll go back over to the offensive side of the ball. You had some tidbits about what each running back brings to the table, some strengths and weaknesses. You started with Wisner, but I feel like we have to start with Baxter. He spoke to the media on Thursday night, talked a little bit about what his process is, and, you know, just going through his injury, what he did throughout the season, what he did in the offseason, watching his girlfriend win a national championship, Mia Scott, on a torn ACL. So he said that her national championship trophy is on his bedside table. It's like, okay, I gotta match that. But Baxter, he said he's 100%. We know that it's approaching that, maybe not all the way there quite yet. But he talked about how he used the last, you know, season that he set out to really improve upon the mental part of the game. And it sounds like from what you read that you wrote, that makes sense. But there's still some rust to kick off as well.
Yeah, I think Sark or somebody said 80%. He said 100%. We've been saying 90%. So, you know, we'll meet in the middle on that. He's showing to be a really patient and smart runner. He has a much better understanding of the run game than when he first got to Texas. I think, again, like Derek Williams used his time off to really understand the game at a higher level. I think CJ Baxter has done the same. So his patience, his intelligence out there is showing to be quite the attribute, and he's got good size. Now, the con on him is he still runs a little high at times, and that's, you know, taller, bigger backs tend to do that. You're going to learn the hard way to run a little bit lower when that Georgia linebacker comes right down the pipe and meets you. But yeah, that's pretty much the only thing. Knocking off the rust, of course, is a con. He'll get through that, though. Everybody wants to know how many carries will he have against Ohio State. We're predicting in the 6 to 8 range, but if he's got the hot hand, they've got a chance to run out the clock like Jonathan Brooks in Tuscaloosa. He might get over 10 carries. We'll see. But everybody's excited to have him back. He's been mentioned first out of the running backs, probably three practices in a row now.
One of the best quotes he gave is like, "I was more excited to get tackled than to score a touchdown." I'm like, okay, you're a football player. The other big three, we'll probably see Ricky Stewart and James Simon a lot on special teams. So the other three that'll probably factor in this year, Trey Wisner, Christian Clark, and Jarrett Gibson. Wisner, you know, he is who he is, but he's better player this year, it seems like, entering 2025.
Yeah, he's a better version of himself that we saw last year. Toughness is the first thing that's always mentioned with him, and that was mentioned again. But he's bigger and more explosive than he was last year. The con, of course, is he's still on the smaller side. There's only so much weight that guy can put on. Now, I don't know that he's fully optimized, but he's getting there. He's a much better version of himself from last year. And also, I think it helps that we're seeing him fresh where, you know, we didn't see him fresh for – I don't know when we saw him healthy last year. Probably – I know we didn't see him healthy in November, December, and January. So I think everybody's kind of – part of the more explosive the opinion that they have him being more explosive is the fact that he's just healthier and fresher. But that should – you know, he's going to be a primary beneficiary of C.J. Baxter, of Christian Clark, you know, of Jarrett Gibson getting carries.
Christian Clark coming off that Achilles injury. This was a player that after Baxter went down, a lot of optimism about what he might be able to do in a larger role. Then Clark goes down himself, but it sounds like there's still a lot of confidence in what he can do here in his redshirt freshman year.
Yeah, despite that injury, you know, he's still called, and I've seen it with my own eyes, the most explosive back, probably the most the biggest playmaker for sure, the best lateral agility, the most dynamic, all those things, all those Bijan traits that we saw, you know, that we saw for years. And then the knock on him is also similar to Bijan. I guess these guys must have been created in the same lab. Was the long speed is just not, it's not elite. It's good. It's not great, but his quickness, his lateral agility, you know, his body can get to where his mind and eyes want to take him. Not a lot of running backs. A lot of running backs can see it, but can't get there. He can get there.
Long speed's always one of those. If you got it, it works. If not, 50-yard gain, still a 50-yard gain.
Initial quickness to and through the hole, vision, feet, balance, all those things are more important than ideally they have that long speed. But if not, you know, they're already 30 yards down the field.
Last, Jarrett Gibson still has the traits that saw him get some carries and score some touchdowns in the Michigan game. But he's also picking up some traits that he didn't have the chance to showcase last year because the coaches just didn't think he had them either.
Well, yeah. Well, ball security is the number one thing that's improved on him. But he's a good downhill runner. He could still bounce it outside. He's got good feet for that. But he's gaining notice for his ability to get downhill. The knock on him is no longer ball security. At least it hasn't shown itself to be an issue in camp. But the knock on him is long speed. That was part of the high school evaluation too. Don't be surprised there. But you know, I go back to the comparison I got last year from a really good source was Frank Gore. Well, Frank Gore, what, rushed for 15,000 yards in the NFL, very rarely broke off a really long run. But he kills you between 8 and 20 yards. I think Jarrett Gibson's a similar runner to that.
Maybe one of the few football players who was this close to playing with his son or being, you know, in a professional football league at the same time as his son. Last but certainly not least, a fun tidbit. Last year, you know, Jahdae Barron switched to number 7, won the Thorpe Award, was a first-round pick. Prior to him, you know, you had Caden Stearns win freshman All-American and go as an early draft pick. Going further back, Michael Huff, first-round pick, All-American, yeah. Thorpe Award winner. Number 7 holds a special place, thanks to the Thorpe Award winners primarily, in the Texas defensive backfield. Who's going to wear it this year, or is it going to stay kind of in the shelves for another season?
Yeah, it looks like that one's on the shelf. I asked if that's a number that has to be earned, and the guy laughed, and he's like, I just don't think anybody wants to follow Jahdae or feels that they can follow Jahdae. So I'm surprised Muhammad didn't want it, but obviously Muhammad likes his number. But Muhammad could have pulled it off, I think.
See, on offense, I think that's Khalik Lockett. So it doesn't hold the same, I guess, allure as on offense as it does on defense, but that's tough to follow up. I don't think anybody was like, hey, let me go get number 10 real quick in 2006. Yeah. I think they knew who that belonged to. So as always, some great notes. Thank you for watching this video. Make sure you like the video. Make sure you subscribe to the channel. We are just over 2 weeks away, so we'll be bringing it on a daily basis for Longhorn info and previewing the Ohio State game. Also, make sure you head to InsideTexas.com. First link in the description. Join for just $1. That gets you access to the best Texas Longhorns community, the best intel, the best recruiting insight, and also a full year of access to The Athletic. So use that first link in the description. And go buy our guy Paul Wadlington's Thinking Texas Football. If you've been seeing some of his articles pop up lately about ranking some of the position groups that Texas is going to face, that all comes from his research for this article. For this book, every position, every player, every opponent, every SEC team, a look at college football, and then, of course, a look at the 2025 class from Eric Nolene. So always a good thing to use. I'm going to reread it probably on my flight up to Columbus. It's kind of when I save it for, and always a good time. So Eric, thank you so much. Thank you for watching. We'll see you next time on Inside the Program, presented by Academy Sports and Outdoors.